The theme for Kielce this year is we've selected six of our Chinese ancestors to highlight. The first of these is Huineng. Huineng was the sixth ancestor, sometimes called the sixth patriarch. If you've been hanging around for a while or practicing Zen for a while, you've probably heard of Huineng and know something of the story that is told about him and his significance in the Zen tradition. Today I'm going to talk first about his story and then about some of his teachings. So before I talk about his story, many of you are probably familiar with it, I want to point out or at least suggest that this story, like many stories of people, of real people from the distant past, is probably a hagiography. Hagiography is, according to the dictionary, a worshipful or idealizing biography. Hagiography is sometimes applied to those people who are identified as saints. Their story is, not entirely factual, but is representative of something. So that might be the case for the story of Huineng. And to that point, if you read about Huineng in Wikipedia, we learn that his biography and his teachings, as recorded in the Platform Sutra, which is sometimes referred to as the Sutra of Huineng, were said to have been recorded by his disciple, Fa Hai. And yet, the text shows signs of having been edited and expanded over a period of about 500 years after the original version appeared in 780. So Zen Master Huineng died in 713. So we take it with a grain of salt, but we take from it what we can. We read that Huineng himself told his story many years after he became the sixth ancestor. The first ancestor, of course, was Bodhidharma, who traveled from India to China. First ancestor of Zen. So Huineng was born in the 7th century. His father died when he was young, and he took care of himself and his mother by selling firewood. One day, he's going about his business, and he heard someone reciting something, and his mind opened up. So he asked this person, "What is it that you're reciting?" And learned that it was the Diamond Sutra, and that the person had acquired it from a monastery where the fifth ancestor, Hongren, was teaching. So Huineng made arrangements for his mother's welfare, and he headed out for this monastery where Hongren was, and apparently it took him about a month to get there. And he meets Hongren, and Hongren recognized Huineng had some understanding. But Huineng was not a monk. Huineng was illiterate. And so Hongren put him to work in splitting firewood and pounding rice. About 8 months go by, and Hongren quietly tells Huineng that his understanding is sound, but that Hongren has to keep this on the down low because this illiterate barbarian would come to harm if others who were Hongren's followers were to learn that Huineng, had this attainment, and they might be jealous of him. Hongren then sets up a contest, we could say, and he asks his monks at the temple to submit a verse to demonstrate their understanding of the truth. And he told them that if any of them proved to have true wisdom, that he would give them transmission and pass to them the robe and bowl of the lineage that purportedly came from Bodhidharma himself. So most of the monks said, "I'm not up to that." But there was the senior monk, Shen Shui, and the other monks deferred to Shen Shui and said, "Well, he can probably do this." So Shen Shui now feels obligated to write a verse. And as the story goes, he agonized over it. He knew that if he writes something down and declares that it's his, and it's not accepted, then his lack of insight would be revealed to all. So he's struggling with this, and after several days he decides that he's going to write the verse anonymously on a wall rather than present it formally and risk public embarrassment. So here's the way his verse is translated in our Kangen collection. Four lines. Body is Bodhi tree. Mind is clear mirror stand. Always clean, clean, clean. Do not keep dust. Hwanggren sees the verse, as do others, and he talks with Feng Shui and learns that yes, Feng Shui did write this verse. Hwanggren knew that Feng Shui did not possess true insight. Nevertheless, he said that the verse written on the wall had merit, and that it should remain there, and that others should memorize and recite it so that they would receive benefit from it. And as it happened one day, Hui Neng hears a boy chanting Shen Shui's verse, and he inquired about it. He then composed his own verse in reply. And because he's illiterate, he asked for help to write his verse on the wall next to Shen Shui's. Here's Shen Shui's verse again. Body is Bodhi tree. Mind is clear mirror stand. Always clean, clean, clean. Do not keep dust. Here's Hui Neng's reply. Bodhi has no tree. Clear mirror has no stand. Originally nothing. Where is dust? Those present were amazed that Hui Neng composed this penetrating verse. But for his safety, Hwanggren declared publicly that it did not fully demonstrate the truth. Later, however, he secretly met with Hui Neng, and he asked him, as the story goes, is the rice ready? And Hui Neng replies, ready all along, only waiting for the sieve. Which, I think, means, yeah, I'm ready, but I need your acknowledgement. Later that night, Hwanggren meets with Hui Neng, and he discusses the Diamond Sutra with him. Again, the Diamond Sutra is what Hui Neng heard, someone reciting and, you know, had an awakening. And Hui Neng has a deep awakening. And so he becomes the sixth ancestor. Hwanggren orders him to go into hiding so that he doesn't come to harm by those who would not accept him. So Hui Neng takes off, and he was pursued, but he was able to escape. And I guess you could say he went off into the wilderness. The story is that he lived among some hunters for 15 years and occasionally would expound the Dharma to them. It also says that he would sometimes, you know, the hunters would trap animals and he would let them go. And he would put vegetables in the pot. So after that, after 15 years, he emerges and he becomes a monk and he starts to teach. And many of his students became teachers. And I think virtually all Zen lineages, well, I'm not entirely sure about that, come through this lineage, the lineage of Hui Neng. So now that's his story. And there's a little more of his story coming, but we have his story. What about his teachings? So we know that he was awakened by the teachings of the Diamond Sutra. So familiarity with the Diamond Sutra can help us understand Hui Neng's teaching. The Diamond Sutra is thought to have been originally composed in Sanskrit. It might have been the second century. It might have been in the very, very first part of the fifth century. But apparently it's known that it was first translated into Chinese in 401. The oldest surviving printed version, just anecdotally, printed version, not written version, but printed version, is preserved in woodblocks in Korea that were made in this printed version was made in 751. The text, if you haven't read it, takes the form of a discourse between Shakyamuni Buddha and his disciple, Subhuti. So it's important to know that I'm not like deeply familiar with the Diamond Sutra. I've been through it. I've looked through it in preparation for this talk. It's not long. You can read it in an hour or two, depending on how fast you read. Its meaning is said to be very subtle. And when you read through it the first time, you get some sense of its depth. Principal themes in the Diamond Sutra are emptiness and non-self, which are, of course, point to each other. The word emptiness, I think, doesn't serve us very well. It's this English word, emptiness. Emptiness in English usually means nothing, but that's not what we're talking about. So how do we work with, talk about emptiness? It's not so easy, I would say. Zen Master Jibong said that emptiness means no separation. And in a related way, he said that everything is flux and flow. So the phenomenal world does exist. It's not nothing. But it's in a constant state of change. Some of you, actually a couple of you, turned me on to this Korean Zen master, Daehaeng, Daehaeng Sunni. She died in 2012, a well-known contemporary teacher in Korean Buddhism. She said about this flux and flow, about phenomena, she said, everything is ceaselessly flowing without any fixed shape or form. There is only change and manifestation. So there is nothing you can carry with you. Notice this does not deny that there, that stuff, things, us, thoughts and feelings exist. That is manifestation, but they are in a constant state of change. And so you can't hold on to anything. There's nothing you can carry with you. In the Diamond Sutra, this shows up repeatedly through various examples. Buddha tells Subhuti that wherever there are material characteristics, there is delusion. But whoever perceives that characteristics are, in fact, no characteristics, that person perceives the Tathagata, or the truth. He teaches Subhuti that one should not allow the mind to depend upon anything, and that the mind should be kept independent of any thoughts that arise within it. There's a repetitive pattern of language in the Diamond Sutra. If you've looked at it, it's very apparent. And it's to declare that X is not X. It's simply called X. So here are a couple of paraphrased examples. Mind is not mind. It is merely called mind. Phenomenal characteristics don't exist. They are merely called characteristics. There's another variation on that language pattern. It's that X is not X, and therefore it is X. Here are two examples of that. Great merit is without foundation, and so is called great. The second one. In the consummation of incomparable enlightenment, the Buddha acquired not the least thing, and thus it is called consummation of incomparable enlightenment. Now back to Huainan. So 15 years go by in the wilderness, and he finally leaves the company of the hunters, and he made his way to a temple. And there he right away distinguished himself when he met two monks who were arguing about whether it was the wind or the flags that were moving. So again, this is the story. He told them that it was their minds that were moving. And that Kung-un has been, has been part of this retreat this weekend that we have in our collection. So the master of the temple complimented Huainan and asked him questions. Now, Huainan traveled to this temple and met Hongren. And that area where Hongren's temple was is called Huangmei. And the master of the temple where Huainan is now heard that the teachings of Hongwei were moving south. And he thinks that Huainan is the one who is bringing this teaching to his temple from the north. And he asked him, how is the legacy of Huangmei demonstrated and transmitted? Huainan replied, there is no demonstration or transmission. It is only a matter of seeing nature, not a matter of meditation or liberation. The master then asked, why is it not a matter of meditation or liberation? And Huainan replies, because these two things are not Buddhism. Buddhism is a non-dualistic teaching. Here we see the teaching of emptiness or non-dualism. That's in the Diamond Sutra and this no separation, as in Master Jean Bong put it. Huainan makes the point that, as from the Diamond Sutra, that demonstration, transmission, meditation, liberation are characteristics. That is, ideas. They're in the realm of name and form, which are, in fact, not independently substantial. So the next day, same place, and probably in front of roughly the same company, or maybe more people, Huainan said to the assembly, "Good friends, if you want to enter the most profound realm of reality and prajna samadhi, you should cultivate the practice of prajna and recite the Diamond Prajna Sutra. Then you'll attain perception of essential nature. You should realize that the merit of this sutra is immeasurable, boundless. It is clearly extolled in the sutra, but no one can explain it completely. This teaching is the highest vehicle." So Huainan is transformed by the Diamond Sutra, and now he's promoting this teaching, the teaching of the Diamond Sutra. Here are a couple of other things he said from the same lecture. This is on immediacy and non-attachment as attainment of truth. He said, "If you open to understanding of the teaching of immediacy, you do not cultivate practice grasping externals. You simply activate accurate perception at all times in your own mind, so afflictions and passions can never influence you. This is perception of essential nature." Unquote. So, by remaining attentive in the moment, he says, we don't adhere to or reject this ever-changing phenomenon. And in not adhering to it, we never go astray. Here's another one. This one on non-attachment to and freedom from thoughts. He says, "What is freedom from thought? If you see all things without the mind being affected or attached, this is freedom from thought. If you did not think at all, however, you will cause thoughts to be stopped entirely. This is dogmatic bondage. This is called a biased view." So here's a little interpretation for me. Huainan identifies thoughts, which are real, as part of ever-changing phenomena, not separate from the whole and its myriad changing characteristics. As such, they should neither be rejected nor grasped as the truth. He said if we attach to our thoughts as truth, then this is kind of bondage. And then in trying to stop our thinking, we are instead attaching to and in bondage to our thinking. This brought up for me, you know, the teachings of Zen Master Sung San, who, in one of the entries in Dropping Ash of the Buddhas, he said, the true meaning of sitting Zen is to cut off thinking and keep not moving mind. I don't think that he meant that exactly. I'm not going to check Zen Master Sung San. but he did say, you know, but he was talking about don't know. He said, don't know is the mind that cuts off. In his life, Huainan expounded much more on the Diamond Sutra. And a relatively recent publication is the Shambhala book entitled The Sutra of Huainan, Grand Master of Zen. And in that book, translated by Thomas Cleary, is presented Huainan's commentaries on the Diamond Sutra. So you can get that book and read them for yourself. Here are a couple things from that. These are commentaries from Huainan on the Diamond Sutra. He said, the realized one says that false thoughts in the natures of living beings are numerous as atoms in a billion world universe. So these thoughts that we have, these false thoughts, numerous. I mean, atoms in a billion world universe, that's a lot of atoms, that's a lot of thoughts, right? It essentially means endless and continuous. All living beings have their Buddha nature obscured by the ceaseless appearance and disappearance of atoms of false thoughts, and do not attain liberty. If you can truly and correctly practice the unfixed, formless practice of prajnaparamita in every moment of thought, you realize the mundane toils of false thoughts are none other than the pure nature of reality. So I understand this this way. The thinking, like every other thing we identify, is separate and distinct, is ceaseless, and ever-changing, and therefore empty of independent existence. And if we see this, we attain that interbeing. We attain that interbeing of the absolute and the relative, that is, of empty space and phenomena, including the phenomena of thoughts, is the ever-changing true reality. So, interbeing, you know, that absolute truth, you know, stillness and relative truth, the 10,000 things are the totality of reality. Here's one more thing from Huinan. This came from the book Zen's Chinese Heritage and the entry for Huinan. Huinan said, this is kind of a good one, I think, those who would realize the practice of non-action must arrive at the non-perception of the errors of people. This is non-moving nature. Deluded people simply stop the movement of their bodies, but as soon as they open their mouths, they are talking about other people's rights and wrongs and contradicting the way. So this is, you know, our sixth precept. We vow not to talk about the faults of others. We know it says if we do that, you know, we're contradicting the way. That's what I have for today about Huinan and the Diamond Sutra. I would recommend looking at the Diamond Sutra. It's not that long. It has that punchy ending. You can memorize and practice. Thanks for practicing again.